That's why I'm all in bed. Nobody gives me sympathy.
Hello, and welcome back to our podcast with a fanfic of a fanfic that itself is a synthesis of Fallout, a popular game about a post-apocalyptic wasteland, and My Little Pony, a popular show about pastel horses. Hi, I'm Fi. I'm joined once again with my co-host, Weird. Say hello, Weird.
This is Sir Weirdington Esquire, and God damn it, I got shit to say on this one. I'm coming in both fucking barrels. Let's waste no time. We're going to do a little bit more in depth of a recap this week. We're gonna reach up.
Yeah, Weird did something I do not condone in any way, in the slightest, and I can't stress this enough. Do not read this story under any circumstances, or it will kill you.
In case you thought it was, in case you might have wondered or worried for even a moment that Fi might be exaggerating. So mea culpa. I did this initially as sort of an act of humility, as an act of consideration, because I got a bad case of listless brain. For all my airs, for all my sophistication and what have you, I am very stupid, and so occasionally I will get caught thinking about one thing Fi has said, and he will continue narrating the story while I'm chewing over like a previous idea that's been raised, and I'll miss things. And so I was wondering why I couldn't figure out why the fuck were they doing this thing that there were a few things that confused me, and so I had to like try to look at the wiki, and then I tried to actually dig into the original source material in order to resolve it. And here are my findings. Here's something that I've uncovered. So let's start off with something that we handled last week, which was making it very clear that raiders and reapers, non-equal, not the same thing. In spite of the fact that they have similar sounding names, both starting with R, and they both appear at the same time in the story. They were both introduced coinciding with each other, and they both behave in fundamentally the same ways, but they are not in fact the same. The raiders are subject to a disease that makes them acceptable to kill. Basically, that's the beginning and end of it. Is that like
they have jobber disease?
Yes,
they got mukitis.
They have jobberitis. It's a terrible affliction.
They look down and realize they're piloting a Zeku.
No, there's a transformation humiliation fetish. You thought you were in a Gundam.
It turns out you're in a Zeku the whole time. Oh, man.
So anyway, raiders are just random people who've caught jobberitis and have apparently somehow, like, nothing or next to nothing to do with the Reapers, who are an elite band of exactly 100 until it's retconned. Just high-level operators.
Yeah, the best of the best of the best.
Except that doesn't even make any sense, because, their function in the social ecosystem of the Wasteland is that they're supposed to police the gangs. They're supposed to keep the gangs, like, controlled and under thumb. And that immediately falls apart if you know anything, even the slightest thing about history and sociology. Because
had you been reading up to this point, it wouldn't make any sense either.
Yeah, because, so, here's the thing. This is almost exactly equivalent to, imagine a bunch of Chinese provincial warlords who, like, have, like, you know, civilization intruses with each other, and their main fear that they all share is the, like, terrifying horse archer step nomads. who periodically come in and raid and, like, conquer them.
As they do.
If they're ever at all organized, because if they're, like, individual, endlessly feuding bands, clinging to survival out on the steppe, they're pretty easy to repel. They're only ever a problem when they're organized. So imagine these fucking, like, civilized warlords, in their walled cities, coming together and saying, you know, this Genghis Khan fellow, like, he really is bringing order and structure to the terrifying steppe nomads. They're really well organized and, like, put together when he's around. We should back him. We should make sure that fellow has legitimacy. It's mind-boggling. Every self-styled civilized power in existence ever. The last thing they want in the world is organized gangs. Like the entire premise of, like, classic gang mythology movie The Warriors is the idea that, like, the police raid because the gangs are about to organize. Can you dig it? Is a phrase that would herald an apocalyptic scenario in which New York is coup d'etat and removed from the power of the United States by a unified force of gangs. There's that. That hasn't been stated enough. So to be very clear, Reapers not Raiders. Raiders should not exist. Every other power in the wasteland should gang up to bomb them out of existence.
With the only real excuse being that, like, since
they're just too high level. They're not even a disease. No, but the Reapers, as an organized political bloc, should be swatted immediately. That is a high nail that needs, like, stomping down in any, like.
Well, the thing I've insisted multiple times, though, is the fact that, like, all of the faction leaders were all former friends, so, like, none of them really want to go to war with each other.
So, speaking of that, furthermore, this is the point where we get to why I did this, why I read this bit of text, and hold on, readers, hold on, listeners, you're about to get a selected reading of fucking Sanguine's prose, or Somber. I have a little paragraph here, precisely one paragraph of Somber's prose we're going to read. But first, so I actually read where they were discussing why they can't just go, when they decided to try and go underground, to get into, Steel Ranger territory. And, it was a mere Troishka doll of stupid. Like, everything about this just kept getting stupider and stupider. Like, for one thing, their entire mission makes even less sense than their arbitrary, like, decision that they've now basically forgotten to try and trace back the source of the Maltese.exe. So the situation is that a war has started. Because for whatever reason, instead of flying a white flag, like, the Reapers and the Steel Rangers were on either side of this vital bridge that everybody in the wasteland needs, treating it as sort of a North Korea-South Korea demilitarized zone. And in order to get through this, like, point, our gang of morons decides to throw a bomb at the Raiders' side, hoping it will, like, frame the Steel Rangers and cause the Reapers to attack the Steel Rangers. Set the torch paper for a war. This was Cassius Belli for a full-scale war between these two factions. So the entire microwave hallway segment, the entire, like, going underground segment was to get to Steel Ranger territory to sue for peace. Problem! I found out in trying to figure out how they came to think this was a good idea. I read chapter 25 and fucking Charles Bronson, head of the Reapers,
Big Data Reaper.
Blackjack confesses, you would think that the only route to peace here is that the Reapers look like the aggressors in the situation to the Steel Rangers. They took a swing on the bridge for no apparent reason. Truce broken, and so the only way to create a diplomatic situation scenario would be to get the party that broke the treaty to understand that they were the aggressor, that they did the fuck up, that a false flag had been targeted against them, and get them to the negotiating table in the first place. Well, it turns out in chapter 25, Blackjack confesses that, hey, I was the one who attacked you, and Charles Bronson's response is, oh, well, good thing we don't care. We've been looking forward to this war for a while.
Yeah. Lovable scamps these Reapers are.
What's the point? You can't. There is no peace to be had. If one of the two sides is looking forward to this war, who thinks that they stand a good chance and want to acquire some territory out of it, if one side in a two-sided war feels they have everything to gain by continuing hostilities, there's no amount of talking to the other side in the world is going to end the hostilities. Unless they intend to go over to the Steel Rangers and join their side to just roll the fight to
I mean, the only thing I could possibly think of, not even as a defense, but I guess why this is happening at all, is Sombra had a very specific set piece in mind for this coming war and has wrote all of this crap to justify getting them there. And we'll get to that set piece. And it's a cool set piece, don't get me wrong. It's a really, really evocative, powerful moment. It just it requires so much crap to get to that point.
There's 1,000 better ways you could get to this. The whole fucking microwave hallway is I also read the beginnings of the next chapter, and the number of options they don't consider before they throw up their heads and go, well, how about we go into the Underdark? Was the Seaman literally the only boat in the setting?
Yes. It's the only time we've ever seen a boat. It's the only working boat in the whole story.
Aren't there ports? Don't we
No. Okay. There's one port. Two ports. Sorry. And even one's kind of half a port.
Okay.
I hate to be giving explanations.
Nobody builds or repairs boats in this. There's a river, but no one wants to do commerce down it. Okay.
Yeah, basically. I mean, the basic logic is that,
Or even, whatever. Okay.
The only possible excuse I could give you is that, boat engines are very hard to build in this setting because they're magic bullshit, and that, we're living in a new neo-dark ages in this setting, and no one knows how to make anything.
Including paddles. Including a stick that you put in the water to push the water.
Well, that's why it puts a lot of emphasis on the idea that raiders patrol the area and just shoot people that they see on the river just for fun.
Yeah, just a limitless
a number of bandages and duct tape to make it so that any argument you could possibly have is looped out by logical consistency and not anything that would matter in a story to make it compelling. Yeah, I know. It's almost as if this was written by a person who does not give a shit about, I guess gives a shit about themes, but, does not, spends too much time trying to, logic loop their way out of problems.
So the last, story thing I'll say is that, as far as I can tell, I've just, having had to actually expose myself to the raw material, they really did just take a fucking wild left turn at Albuquerque. There's, They just
wake up in the collegiate.
They went way off. The only way that this the map of the setting could make sense is if they went extremely far east of their destination, meaning that on every level the microwave hallway was a waste of time. Before I finally move into the summation of the last chapter we talked about, let's do that selected reading. This is immediately after Charles Bronson takes off his glasses and tells Blackjack, it's a nice day outside, the birds are singing, the sun is shining, ponies like you should die. Okay. Now keep in mind, this is everything I'm about to read is from a single... Is there some sort of rule that old ponies are supposed to give cryptic prophecies to fuck with the minds of the young? I asked sharply. Then I was practicing my flying skills as his hoof toss sent me sailing towards the goalposts. At least I didn't hit the horizontal bar before landing in a heap. He trotted over and helped me up. So astute listeners will notice that contained a quote, a quoted statement from a character. If you went to elementary school, you should know means that it needs to stand alone as a paragraph. There needs to be a break there. So thank you, Hins and Bronode.
Bronide. It's like Hines and Bronide, I think it is.
Yeah, Hines and Bronode. Credited editors on this chapter. Fuck you. fuck you for failing as a copy editor on just that, on that simple, like, formatting. Furthermore, another fine fuck you for the next sentence. Then I was practicing my flying skills as his hoof toss sent me sailing toward the goalposts. I had to read that sentence, like, two, maybe three times. Because I was deep, like the sudden left turn of... I asked sharply. Then I was practicing my flying skills. What? I could almost give an author credit for, like, doing that as, like, an intentional, like, complete cognitive disrupt. Like, to simulate the effect of suddenly you've been kicked in the sternum so hard that you are flying. But it's a very stupid... it's very dumb! It is a profoundly dumb metaphor. I think the last... thing I have to really complain about is hoof toss as a descriptor for a kick.
It's definitely not a kick. We were arguing this off podcast, but it's definitely not a kick because if it was a kick, it would say a kick or a buck. So my
or a punt best because guess, it's on a football field.
But my best guess would be because these people were all bronies. Like it would have to be buck because that's in their brains. That's the only like word you could use for a kick. So like. A hoof toss has to be some sort of judo throw. Like, it has to be. And my basis really just goes down to, like, cringy meta, like narrative language is really just my argument here. Like, there's no...
No, I mean, like, that makes this so, so manifestly stupider. So wildly, like, overwhelmingly stupid. Like, imagine, like, try and... Don't be like Somber. When you write something like this, try and frame what the fuck that's supposed to look like in your mind. That, like, BJ finishes her sentence. Horse Charles Bronson moves forward. Imagine the fucking late 2000s Newgrounds Flash animation. Reaches forward with his hind hooves. Grabs her.
No, it would be four hooves. It would be four hooves.
Yeah, four
it
hooves.
Would be
like,
the
like
front
the
part.
Forward hooves grabs either side of her head or shoulders. And
I'm thinking it's
throws?
Like a giant swing, like a wrestling move. And throws her, yes. They don't, like we're nitpicking the logistics of this, but it's funny to think about that, like, these horses are too small to have the, like, center of gravity required to throw another person far enough that it would be considered like a significant feat. Like they're just the anatomy isn't there.
I thought it was bad, and you made it worse.
I thought it was overwhelmingly
bad.
It turns
and
out
now
it
it's worse than that.
All right.
I am beyond whelmed. There was too much whelming. I was overwhelmed, and now I am beyond that.
This is going further beyond whelmed. All right, we gotta get through, like...
Right, anyway, so after, like, their mind-blowingly stupid left turn at Albuquerque, which, from my scanning of the shit prose, I couldn't find any evidence of them pointing out, yeah, we all got fucked up. Everybody is, like, in a coma, and permanently maimed. Blackjack is now Blackjack the Noodle Horse. Her limbs are spaghetti. There's a lot of like whinging over the Fallen. Professor the Fallen is down a wing. But at no point does anybody seem to bring up, hey, we this entire expedition was incredibly pointless. anything would have been better than what we just did. Getting in a goddamn rowboat would have been better. Like, getting in a rowboat and risking Steel Rangers or Reapers, like, raining bullets on them would have been...
trying to run really fast and hope they just miss would have been a smarter move.
And they didn't even get anywhere near, like, they got, like...
Well, they got near.
Yeah, remotely like, closer.
It's important to note they are on the other side of the river, so they did technically accomplish their point. They just, like... We're just now, like, in a muck of bullshit for the next, like, two chapters.
God damn it.
Over it.
Yeah, so, anyway, BJ wakes up, as a noodle horse. Her limbs are no longer practically functional. She's octodadding around an operating table. Shoots two nurses with her mind bullets. And they put her under with the fucking party orb. Which, in the text, yep. like... My fucking god, they really do, like, have this same fucking orb set aside for every unicorn patient. Like, every unicorn who has ever had major surgery in this hospital has been to this fucking boring party.
That they have no context for because they don't know who any of these people are.
Which, like, I can only imagine has had some sort of weird cultural impact on the immediate, like, area.
Like, how many people have woken up going, who the fuck is Golden Blood?
Anyway, so yeah, the Fallen, find out the Fallen has permanently lost a wing. So, and everybody else is basically comatose. P-21 decides to leave forever until he realizes that he's trapped on the wrong side of the apparently incrossable demilitarized zone bridge. And then comes crawling back. Blackjack goes on a long, also super pointless walkabout that results in her contacting Dr. Professor the Fallen's Nazi sister, who comes to visit her in the hospital. We find out that Blackjack has absorbed so much orb that she has become orb. She Vulcan mind melds with Goth Lolita, mini giantess. Is there any relevance to the vision that was had while she became orb? Like, I don't
is,
remember anything about it.
It is, but not for this story. It's mostly just, like... It has no...
For a different story, alright?
It has no narrative relevance, except for unless you've read Fallout Equestria. If you haven't, then it means nothing to you.
Fuck! Alright.
Like, I guess which isn't that surprising, given that the only way you would read this... Unless you were specifically in the case of listening to it for the first time to this podcast, you would actually know this ahead of time.
I was going to
save even still.
I was going to save this for later, but that point makes it extremely immediately relevant. I have a note here on my notes. I took notes for this episode because I was so angry.
This is why I don't let him read it.
That's what happens when you make Sir Weirdington Esquire angry. He takes notes. Both me and Fi are illustrators, and in the drawing community, in drawing circles, there's a practice that is sometimes called redlining, wherein you take somebody who done fucked up, like when you're trying to teach somebody about where they went wrong with something, especially anatomy, you take their image and you set your pen to like a bright, distinct color like red, so that it stands out on the presumably black or gray image. And you trace over it like with like a loose sort of skeleton, like indicating where like the anatomy broke in unpleasant ways, and like try and give them a better sense of three dimensionality. Like, okay, here's what you could have done instead. Here's a way of going forward. And on a similar note, there was a news story a little while back about an old lady who came across a Renaissance painting of Jesus that had done some flaking with age. And so she decided to take it upon herself to restore it with no artistic training, no artistic background of any kind. This fucking thing, Fallout, like Project Horizons, is a fucking fix-fic. Everything I've said up to this point is about a fix-fic. So this is, I don't have to read the original Fallout Equestria to know how bad and dumb this is. Like, Mia Moore, you've got some fucking cojones to come in and redline someone else's work, man. I'm trying to imagine like a fucking sixth grader coming in and doing a red line on like Da Vinci's Ultimate Man.
This made me think of a really like really minor thing that I enjoyed for a while. Is for a very short amount of time after Project Horizons was finished, there was like a meme in the community that went around for a while of like Blackjack going, "This isn't how the story like ended," and was like basically rewrote Fallout Equestria herself. Because people were so sour about the ending of Project Horizons, and it just made me think of this, is that, like, I'm curious to see what, I feel like I don't want to, but I should also go through and check out, like, I don't know if it's a fix fic or a sequel, written by one of the editors, named Fallout Equestria Project Horizons Speak, and I'm curious about, like,
do it.
What that's like.
A double dog dare you. Haagen-Dazs, flip dog, dare you? Anyway,
man, we are half an hour in, and we
30
have
minutes in, even... and we wrap up the recap of last episode with this Professor Zodiac, the head of the collegiate, the main medical and science faction in this setting, is also the head of the Jobber Brigade. That's been hounding Blackjack for a while, the Zodiacs. You know what you need in a deniable asset? Brand recognition. Anyway, we ranted about that plenty last episode. If you want to hear more of my thoughts on how incredibly dumb this Professor Zodiac twist is, listen to last episode. So, what perk did we get from our hospital adventure?
We got two. We got, fucking, I don't know how she got these, but she got another upgrade to her magic bullets. She's become even further gun.
Because she shot two nurses. That's a thing I found out looking at the tent. This is like, she actually maimed hospital staff.
She now can snipe with her magic bullets, because the distance is creased. And she also gained the perk Made of Stubborninium. You just don't know when to give up and die. When reduced to 25% or fewer hit points, you gain +6 DT and regenerate 2 HP per second till above 25% hit points. I'm assuming that's from all of her rubber legs.
She's now impact resistant, like Luffy.
Oh, man. This chapter is a mess. Chapter 26, Orientation.
Man, I wish I was indestructible from, like, having spent... 6 weeks in a hospital.
Yeah.
And then another few weeks.
You mean
weeks
you're not? this is what I'm going to call the hand-wringing do-nothing episode of the podcast, because basically fuck all happens in this.
Oh, goddamn it.
They spend a lot of time hemming and hawing about what they should do, and basically accomplish nothing. So much nothing that to spoil something, because we don't get a perk this week because she doesn't even hit another new level. I have no new perk to talk about for next week. Okay, so chapter 28, Orientation.
We can speculate about a perk that would be
a perk she could have had.
All right, so let's get going. Tell me all about the nothing that happens.
Yep, all about the nothing. So chapter 28 opens up, and there's a lot of like interstitial vignettes in this chapter that I don't get why they're here. I think it's just to make the chapter feel more artsy and more full. But all, like, every couple of, like, scenes, there's a vignette of what feels like a weird, like, reality television show, like, interview with a member of the cast talking about their relation to Blackjack. And a lot of them are really just about, like, inflating Blackjack's ego and talking about, like, oh, she's so crazy, but she's also so good, and I can't help but, like, be in awe of her greatness. Which just sucks and doesn't matter, and I'm only really bringing it up here, so I don't have to talk about it ever again.
Remember,
yay!
Again, this is a fix-fic, because the little Pip is too much of a Sue.
Yes. little Pip is too much of a Mary Sue.
Not like Blackjack, who everyone loves, and is like...
everyone loves despite being a rapist, a fascist, a drug addict, broken beyond repair, needlessly violent, all those fun things. So we start this chapter with Blackjack taking a hostage. The Zodiacs menace her, and BJ immediately dives onto Triage and is like, I will actually stab her with my horn if you guys don't back off. Which is admittedly hardcore, and I kind of like it because it's a solution I feel like this Blackjack would actually do, like, would actually try for at this point, instead of trying to talk her way out, which he's been doing the last few chapters. This doesn't even really manage to, like, sway Triage. Like, they're basically like, yeah, whatever, the Zodiacs, but you're still coming with us. Triage is kind of impressed by Blackjack trying to kill her because of her, like, complaint. Like, Triage's complaints of hero worship in the previous chapter and all that shit. So she's like, oh, you know, you're a lot more human than I thought you were, is basically the the tone of the interaction. But yay.
Okay, yeah, no, that also two chapters ago I joked about, like, they get to the top of the elevator and immediately become POWs to the Steel Rangers. But it turns out that they actually are in enemy territory the whole time. It's just skipped my brain that, oh, wait a minute, if the Zodiacs are in charge of this place, then the situation is actually the same. Why are they allowed to walk about freely? Why wouldn't she be?
Oh, get ready. It's about to get real dumb.
About to get real. Oh, it's going to change the pace. It's going to get dumb. You hear that, audience?
Listen. You think, I keep telling you, you think we're at the bottom. But there is so much more ground we can excavate into.
It's like he thought of this twist at the end of writing last chapter. Like, Professor Zodiac! It's a big twist. You're in enemy territory the whole time.
Probably. Anyways, they head to a planetarium that's in the collegiate. Because it's like the building Zodiac is in. We get a big, goofy... I am the great and terrible Oz moment where, like, a projector clicks on and, like, a holographic head of a giant scary pony appears. And then Blackjack's like, nah, I don't got time for that. And then she's like, fair enough. And Zodiac is shrinks down to a little tiny unicorn and is, like, just a normal person. And she insists that, like, she lost a bet with Rampage, who made a bet, I guess, that, like, BJ wouldn't be intimidated by a giant talking ghost head. But yeah, Professor Zodiac, she's a weird hologram, whatever. They chat for a while, and...
I hear they put you in the party orb.
Basically. She basically goes, like, well, I need, like, I want your help, and by want my help, I mean I'm demanding it, because, like, you spend a lot of time in our medical facilities getting patched up, and, like, your bill is so high you can't possibly pay it, so, like, we're just gonna, like, take the Maltese EXE away from you as, like, payment because I need it for some reason. And she reveals her region and is like, I want to reactivate one of the OIA's old projects, Project Steel Pony. And, you know, BJ, like, mentions about having some knowledge about that, and the whole, like, crew kind of gets confused of, like, oh, why do you know this, Blackjack? And then she kind of, like, spills the beans that she's been, like, accidentally keeping secrets, and the whole crew gets really mad at her because, like, it's like just a dumb confusion moment. Like, she didn't think to, like, explain to other people that, like, she knew all these dumb war secrets from the memory orbs, and everyone, like, gets real hostile about it.
It's not her fault she keeps getting, like, that everybody else in the setting isn't curious about all these ancient wartime secrets that she's gathering up off the ground. It's not her fault. She keeps getting beamed in the head with ancient pre-war knowledge that's available to anybody.
Well, I mean, okay, so that's actually kind of the point of this scene to a certain extent, so let me get into it. But yeah, once Project Steel Pony to unsealed, and BJ, in like the moment of confusion and panic, almost gives up the pip buck when like Glory shows up, the Fallen, and she's like, she doesn't owe you fucking anything. She was completely unconscious the whole time. She did not ask for medical medical treatment. You're just conning her out of bullshit. And just immediately calls like Zodiac's bluff. Which works.
Also, why the con? Like, you had her completely at.
So they ask about that, and Zodiac is like, "Listen, Blackjack. Anytime anyone has ever tried to take anything from you, they've died horribly. So I didn't want to take my chances."
Could also just like refuse treatment until nature took its course, and then acquired.
I mean, they were hinging on the idea that like the medical treatment would make BJ feel like she's in her debt, which has like been sort of historically proved like a case with Blackjack. So like it's not actually that ridiculous. It's just still a really crazy plan. It hinges on Blackjack being a good person in a wasteland where no one's a good person.
Also, like, it hinges on superstitions being like factual, like just like anyway. No, it makes perfect sense because the world in which these decisions are made is very stupid.
Yeah, basically. But I only just really want to give props to this is what I remember of Glory.
Smart decisions like, in a stupid world.
Yeah, this is what I remember more about Glory being a lot more assertive, because she becomes a lot more assertive in the later parts of the story and like starts calling people out on their bullshit, which I really enjoy. Regardless, whatever. But yeah, we jump cut to after the rest of the crew has been caught up on everything that Blackjack knows. Then we get like a little like bomb drop of Zodiac is like, "Oh, well, the reason I know so much about the OIA was because I was one of the project leads." Bum bum bum. And she's actually a 200-year-old cyborg who is half broken and trapped in a tube.
I mean, that seems to get around.
Like, I'm talking about this out of order, but, like, she's basically, like, the whole reason for wanting to, like, open Project Steel Pony back up is that she needs its, like, resources and knowledge to be able to, like, rebuild her stuff so that she can, like, be out of unsealed out of a tube. But there's a lot of hemming and hawing about that for the rest of this chapter, because, like, I guess, like, Zodiac, like, does a bad job of explaining that this is her plan. But anyways, we get like a short cut where Blackjack and Glory, almost like Black Glory. Black Jory.
Yeah, that's the relationship name. It's like Brangelina.
is Black Glory. They reconvene over their relationship, and they talk like Blackjack apologizes for getting her wing destroyed and Glory forgives her, and they have a bunch of conversations back and forth that really, like, is meant to be romantic, but it really just kind of, like, restates my problem of, like, this isn't a relationship, this is codependency. Like, Glory depends on Blackjack to be emotionally stable, and they've confused those feelings for being, in a romantic relationship, which would be fascinating as a, like, character quirk if I didn't know where this was going, which makes this a lot shittier.
Ominous.
Well, I've talked about this before, but, like, inevitably Blackjack and 21 have to end up together, so that like this relationship has to be a train wreck to justify BJ and Glory and 21 eventually ending up together, which is really terrible and unfair to Glory. Like, I've complained this about like a lot. Like, Glory's biggest sin is it really in the story is being a neo-lib, but she just suffers for basically no reason all throughout this story. But yeah, for now they're dating again. They have a makeup kiss, and they're like, "Hey, we need each other, and we can't be apart, or we'll self-destruct." But yay, ship reconvened. Then we get some more backfill about the Zodiacs. First of all, we learn that the Zodiacs kind of took the initiative to try and kill Blackjack without Zodiac, like Professor Zodiac's consent. Really, she mentioned needing Blackjack's pep buck and stuff, and they took the lead from there. We also learned that the reason why they call themselves the Zodiacs is because they... Oh, man. So, she mentions that she's trapped here in a what is essentially an impenetrable castle, and they are likened to her knights, as in her Knights of the Zodiac, which is a Saint Seiya reference, because of the localization shit, because anime! That'll be infuriating to somebody. This whole thing is a dumb pun. But yeah, it was all a big, dumb misunderstanding. The Zodiacs really aren't that bad. Aw, shucks. They just wanted to kill her for gain, for no reason. Well, I guess I should back up. I don't hate Zodiac. She's just kind of, like, frustrating because, like, the story has not justified her being, like, as likable, I guess, as she is up to this point.
Also, it's another example of the setting getting smaller and dumber. Because, like, oh, now that entire bounty storyline was nothing. The bounty, like,
yes,
had absolutely no consequences of any kind.
It had some. It built some tension in book one, but after that, it completely peters out. It doesn't matter again.
Well, I mean, it's retconned out of existence. Like, no one sought out the bounty now.
Yeah. Well, and the people that did, it doesn't matter anymore because Deus is dead and Usury's, like, slavery got took over by Red Eye, so, like, that bounty is completely, like, uncashable. Like, you can't get money from that bounty, so it's effectively nothing. Yeah, it's an utter non-plot point. It's pretty shitty. But yeah, then we get, like, what is essentially a memory orb, but not a memory orb, where, like, Zodiac, like, overlays the planetarium with a, like, three-dimensional, like, memory, like, hologram, where it shows about her past, where it, like, reveals that she was a Zoni, which is a half zebra, half pony, and she was hated by both sides because she, you know, because of racism, essentially, and she was taken in by Golden Blood, who looked past the race because he was just such a good guy, and she was, like, a gifted scientist, she was put to head on one of the, like, myriad of projects that are in this story. She was given a head of Project Eternity and Project Steel Pony. Project Eternity, it was an effort to try and create immortality, and Project Steel Pony was cyberware augmentation. Initially started off as them trying to, like, make prosthetics that worked better, but eventually, like, got spearheaded into a military, like, contract and became a project to build better, more indestructible soldiers. Their first major test was Deus, which is why his cybernetics are all super jacked up and suck. He was considered, like, a failed project, but he got thrown to the battlefield anyways, and then the bombs hit, so it didn't matter anymore.
Such a good guy. He effectively ended the world by making the government increasingly reactionary and hostile. And, you know, yeah, no, such a good guy. He sponsored super cyborg soldier projects using convicts as test subjects.
Yes. But we also found out that Sangun was the head of Project Chimera, which I think we knew from before, but it's just redoubled. And Trottenheimer which is a guy from really early in the story that built the super gun. He was in head of a pair of projects known as Project Starfall and Project Horizons. Which we don't know what they are, either. But yeah, Steel Pony was the cybernetic stuff. We find out that Zodiac was a cyber, like, became cyberized before the war even hit, because she was, like, after Big Macintosh's assassination, people got, like, really redoubled their anti-zebra hatred, and she was, like, violently, like, almost, like, violently mauled to death by, like, a lynch gang, basically, which is a subject way heavier than the story has any, like, right to, like, try and talk about.
Yep.
But she turned herself into a cyborg long before that, and then at some point got super mangled by, I think, an elevator falling on her sometime in the apocalypse, and she's been in, like, a tube for a long time after that. But that, like, a lot of that doesn't really matter, because the reveal of her being, like, a robo pony in a tube is really just there to freak the fuck out of Scotch, because, like, we find out that Scotch Tape, who was, like, almost eaten by, like, the weird ball of cybernetic nonsense that was underneath the, like, in the underground section, has given her a severe phobia of machines in any form, which she has, like, a couple of breakdowns during this chapter that she's, like, feels utterly useless and redundant in the story as a mechanic who is terrified of machines. But yay! We get one cool thing, and then I get to talk about a shitty plot point this story is not equipped to talk about. But they sedate her, and Triage like whines about like them trying to like be soft on Scotch for having freakouts, and she's like sitting there like smoking in the medical wing, and basically talks about like, well, you can't keep them like safe forever. They're gonna eventually be exposed to the wastelands, and like, what are you gonna do then? And like,
this is the worst doctor of all time.
So the only reason why this matters, though, is that Glory is like, you're a doctor. Fucking act like one. You're in a medical building, smoking near your patients. Like, what the fuck are you doing?
And I'm a war criminal.
And even I see that. Well, like, I think I keep stating, though, is that war criminal plot point is incidental at best. Like, I don't really
I'm not gonna let it go. Much in the same way that every time that fucking horse pool comes up, like every time I speak, and like, you'll know that I am speaking for, I'm doing a horse pool impression if I, and you know, and speaking as a baby murderer, like, speaking as somebody who crushes babies to death.
To death. But I do like that she kind of like has a moment of actually like relevance to the plot and story and isn't just the background girl character, which I've been complaining about a lot in chapters, and actually brings up her expertise as a doctor in a way that's organic and cool, and like calls out the frustrating trope that even Somber hinges too much on of like jaded post-apocalyptic doctor. It's a moment of clarity that I like.
Yeah, shouldn't shit too hard on, like, encourage the behavior you want to see.
Yeah. And I like this. I like this new, this bold new fallen taken. I like this one winged Glory. But yeah. But then we get to discuss.
All of my
whinging
was in that wing. So
it was a limiter. It was holding her back. She's gone bitch mode, and I love it. But yeah, now they get to talk about the discussion of, well, we can't fix this phobia thing, but we do know how to remove memories. So the subject becomes the debate of, do we remove Scotch Tape's memories of the trauma, or do we let it ride it out? And this is where we get into a lot of the hammering in this chapter. A lot of this chapter is debating with various members of the story whether or not this is a good thing to do or not. Though BJ makes her feelings pretty hard on the remove her memories thing when Scotch has a pretty massive freakout over her like feelings of uselessness, coupled with the fact that she's still suffering from survivor's guilt. And also the fact that her only actual family in the story does not want her. And regardless of like 21's individual feelings in the story, like Scotch's character is like, Scotch as a character in the story is suffering a lot and needs something, and isn't getting it from this character. But we also get like a fun sort of twist in the knife to 21, and this is one of the rare times in which 21 is called out for anything in the story. In which he's whinging about the idea that, like, I shouldn't have to, like, be responsible for this child or I have to care. And it's basically like, Blackjack's like, you're such a fucking coward. Like, you don't even really need to be her father. You just could be, like, show some sympathy, you asshole. But yeah, anyways.
That's something. At least that's something. My primary complaint is that, like, it's still not what it needs to be, which is, hey, never tell me about your values again, because you clearly don't have any. Like, never, ever make a moral argument to me ever again, or I will shoot you in the skull with mind bullets because you're a liar.
Yeah, I still think it's in the right direction of that sentiment, though. Just little small positive blips in the story, I guess. This is where we get more. More backstory stuff. So Zodiac admits that, whoops, well, not whoops, like, I'm being flippant about this, but this is a serious moment where she like reveals to Blackjack that she led Sanguine to the where the Maltese.exe was going to be, but she like prefaces the fact that she like is like feels the weight of the consequences of it, because she had no idea that, like, because given that they were old colleagues, like she had no idea that like Sanguine was A, going to bring a whole army down on a stable to get it, and B, that the stable would even be occupied in the first place. But they kind of like sympathize with each other for their relative state, because like Zodiac also admits that she only has like a couple of years left to live, because like just the state of broken cyberware isn't enough to keep her alive. So it's sympathizing with Blackjack's like year at most to live at this point. But yeah, we also get more backstory stuff. She was also another member of the Six Companions, but like the six like heroes that got jaded and broken on the back, like on the whetstone of the waste, and all formed their own various factions. So she was, you know, along the ride with Big Daddy and such.
But, I refuse to acknowledge like his canonical name. Like he will.
Yeah, it is Charles Bronson Horse.
Yeah, Charles Bronson. Like and Tom Selleck is like too nice a guy.
But same kind of energy. The only real important thing about this is I don't know if Somber meant to throw this lead so early into the story, but she rattles off all the names of the six companions, which coincides mostly with the ones that we were given by Big Daddy. So we get like, you know, Big Daddy, King Awesome, Silver Stripe, which is Zodiac's name, Crunchy Carrots, which is the head of Steel Rangers, Finders Keepers, which founded the Finders, and Dawn, which is, if we remember from previous chapter, because I had to dig into this because I wasn't sure if this was a spoiler or not, Dawn is Morning Glory's mother. Talk about story shrinkage.
You're the princess of the Sky Nazis. The rightful heir to the Hoofdwaffen.
The once and future Pony King. But yeah, totally unnecessary to also loop her in. Except for, I know, again, since I have read the story, I know why this is setting up for this thing, and I will say that I do not hate Dawn and her inclusion in the story when we eventually get to it. It's actually pretty awesome, but we have to get to it. But just it's kind of frustrating that, like, oh yeah, so like, anything borderline like literal fate being in this story, this is some dumb happenstance that, like, you know, the like daughter of one of the six companions just kind of like fell out of the sky into Blackjack's arms. But yeah, anyways, BJ spends a bunch more time hand wringing over whether or not she should actually do this when she's like wandering through the halls of the through the collegiate, when she bumps into a bunch of like water tanks, essentially. Like they're like preservation tanks or whatever you want to call them. And when she bumps into them, she finds a pair of weird aquatic equines that are sea ponies. They're like half pony, half fish types. And they like joke around with BJ for a while. They reveal themselves as being Pisces and Capricorn of the Zodiacs, which doesn't really matter since the Zodiacs are all buds now. But they rattle off a bunch of dumb origin story ideas that like could be what they are, but then like one of them just admits what it actually is, and this means I get to explain another thing from the story.
Oh boy.
So they just go, oh yeah, we were infected by Killing Joke, and then like BJ's like, you know, blanks on it. So Killing Joke, as they explain in this, so in the original show there was an episode, which is the episode where Zecora is, this is the only zebra character in the original story. Poison Joke was a weird magic mysterious vine like poison ivy stuff that when you touched it turned you into something based off of some weird off-the-cuff remark that you said. So in the show it led into a bunch of wacky hijinks as a bunch of the characters became like weird nonsense, and it's all just a metaphor for like racism basically. But in this, since this is a grimdark story for grimdark ponies, killing joke, the mutated version of it, does the same thing. It plays some sort of prank on you by turning you into something, but it's hyper lethal about it. In their case, in the case of Capricorn and Pisces, they jokingly like were really infatuated with like the myth of the sea ponies, which is a thing in the story, and so it turned them into, and they're like, oh, it would be cool to be sea ponies, so they turned into sea ponies. But they were also like miles away in landlocked like forest, so like they almost died from just being fish out on open ground. I'm only really bringing this up because like Killing Joke is a interesting, I think, is maybe the word I choose to use here, like thing in the lore, the deep lore of the story, which is only really basically a setup for a joke of what happened to Fluttershy, but don't worry about it. Read Fall at Equestria, folks.
but not this. Never this.
Yeah.
Never read Project Horizon.
You will die. It almost killed Weird, and they read like.
And I skimmed it. I skimmed it.
We get a kind of cool moment in a from a certain angle here, where we find out that like Sanguine sort of contacted Glory through her siblings to say that like, hey, Blackjack. I know that you're all kinds of fucked up and your girlfriend's got a broken wing now. Project Chimera could fix all that. And they talk about the ideas of wanting to do that, but they know that like after all Sanguine's done, there's no way they could. But there's kind of a cool like moment where Glory is at odds with like morally she knows that Blackjack has to do the right thing, but she desperately wants both of them to get fixed. So there is a cool, like, a rare moment of actual character depth in which, like, a character is genuinely fighting between, like, their immediate personal emotional desires versus, like, their moral values in a cool way. Anywho, that gets blown out into space immediately afterwards. BJ gets confronted by Lacuna, who is being overshadowed by the goddess at the moment, because the goddess is like, oh, you knew things that you didn't tell me. How dare you? Like, you're going to give this this pony whatever she wants to fix it, because I, like, fix what's going on because I need whatever Project Chimera is, which, you know, BJ, who is now in, like, badass one-eyed eye patch mode, just, like, sticks a gun in Lacuna's mouth and threatens to shoot her if the goddess doesn't back off and let Lacuna reassume control of her own body. They have conversation, I guess, to explain the goddess's motives. So the goddess is a gestalt entity made up of a bunch of alicorns that were transformed by being exposed to a chemical in the story, which colloquially known by the story, the characters in the story, is taint. You have to have it applied the right way or it turns you into a horrible, like, mutant mess of flesh. But if it's done right, you turn into a cool alicorn. But the caveat of this is that all the goddess's alicorns are all women, and they can't conceive with other, like, other race, and they don't want to die out of being a single generation of alicorns, so they need to find some way to be able to make biological alicorn males. So the plan is either Project Chimera, or there's another thing in the story from the original story, which is called the Black Book, but don't worry about it. Read Fall at Equestria. BJ basically just kind of smooth this all over by saying, like, I'm not going to give you Chimera, but I will find, like, some other way of fixing this. I give you my word. And Lacuna, like, accepts that, and so does the goddess. Though there's kind of a weird, like, moment of bolstering that comes out of left field from Lacuna that feels super out of character, where, like, when Blackjack says, like, that, is like, well, Lacuna says, like, well, good, like, good thing that we smoothed this all over. Otherwise, I would have just teleported behind you, killed you instantly, and stole the thing for myself. And it's like a weird moment of just like, it's like, oh, I could have just killed you at any time in that situation. I had total control. It's like that doesn't, like, why was that in the story? Like, that this character doesn't talk like this. Like, I just don't get it. We're getting pretty close to being done this chapter. Thankfully, we just got a couple more things. So Rampage makes her case for Scotch getting Scotch's memories removed, where she's pretty, like, summarily against it, obviously, since, like, Rampage is an amnesiac and, like, hates that, which is very reasonable. And she also, okay, I guess to back up, also, Scotch's memories have already been removed at this point, so Rampage loses it on BJ by saying that, like, because the only way they could remove Scotch's memories is that all of her memories of the chapel had to go. So Scotch has no idea that Rampage murdered a child and doesn't, like, think that Rampage is dangerous, which Rampage hates because she knows that she's a baby killer. And if she's put in the situation where, like, she knows if she's put in the situation where Scotch is upset for any reason, she's going to trust Rampage, and that'll be a moment of weakness that she knows she'll take advantage of. And she hates that, like, the situation has become like this. She's also gone into, like, pure crazy ramble mode by this point, and she mentions, like, the irony of it's like when I became a killer myself to kill a serial killer and, like, got trapped with them for my efforts, which is means nothing to us right now, but it means everything to me.
I'm listening for a second, like, huh. So this is a pretty terrifying and, in hindsight, obvious metaphor for, like, pedophilic impulses.
Oh, it's much dumber than that. It's super, super not as cool as that. Like, it's super not a metaphor thing. It's a literal thing to
I mean,
like,
it can try to be, but, like, let's talk about the tragedy of, like, people
of this, the writing of this story
with pedophilia, which that seems... That it, like, the story as it is, like, right now, is identical to a character dealing with the fact that, hey, look, not receiving, like, medication, like, I have a brain condition that causes this fetish, and this child needs to know that I am dangerous, because I am a good person, and I don't want to, like, traumatize and hurt a child, but if this kid, like, doesn't know not to be alone in a room with me, like, can't have that, like,
yeah, it's I know I'm going to relapse, like, it's yeah, I guess that is a good point, like, it's a another one of those accidental good points made, like, absolute dog shit writing, because again, at some point we will get to it eventually, Rampage will be absolved of all of this, she will be completely
great.
Free of any burden of the consequences of her actions,
great.
Yeah, but I do think that is an interesting point to make, that, like, Blackjack knows she, like, because that's the thing, is that it is a perpetually restated thing about, Rampage, I keep saying Blackjack, Rampage knows she's a threat, she knows she's a danger, she knows she has no control over a bunch of her actions, she's not even mad when Blackjack shoots her in the face, because it's the only, she knows it's the only way they can stop her from, like, relapsing into, like, a more dangerous identity. Especially around children, which is a good metaphor. It's just that, like, it sucks that I know that none of this is intentional. This is all accidental.
Yeah, I mean, we can just, yeah, I think that might be the true of any like positive thing. Like, we had a lot of positive things about to say about the story today, but, like, it's good bet that, like, any given amount of it was accidental. Like, I've never actually known anybody with this specific condition. I've only heard about it, and the closest, like, direct parallel to, like, this is a decent person with, like, a grotesque and horrifying, like, impulse is, I've had very good friends and family who were, like, alcoholics, and, like, they were trying to stay clean, and, like, this friend had tequila in his garage for, like, religious reasons. It's complicated, but anyway, he needed it for religious practice, and, like, he fell off the wagon for a day and wound up with delirium tremens and, like, the whole works, because the thing about addiction is that no matter how long you're clean, like, the second you're exposed to any of it, like, you go back to where you were at your worst, almost instantly, and, like, now, like, he discovered the hard way that he just can't have it, like, in the premises. He can't have access to it, period. Like, no matter what his intentions are, no matter, like, how well he's aware of the consequences, like, it is not in his power to, like, have alcohol where he'd be alone with it.
I'm gonna say for now, I like your interpretation of Rampage, and I like this version, I guess, of Rampage as a character, because, like, oh boy, is the actual answer just stupid. Just stupid. Just a waste of, like, time. Waste of time and potential. Anyways, so Rampage is basically, like, I gotta be, like, not a, like, part of the crew, really, anymore. Because BJ basically lays out, there's, like, a plot thread that's been sort of running through these last few chapters about, like, what are we actually going to do? Like, I'm a dying wreck, and, like, I don't expect anyone to follow me, but if you're going to follow me, then, like, I guess do it, has been her, like, sort of plan here. Because she really pushes towards 21 to just go, same with Scotch, but now Scotch can't, because, like, because that's, like, a consequence of this, is that, like, Scotch now, like, they feed her some false memory bullshit, and then, like, basically say, like, and the problem now is that, like, Scotch has no reason for why she would want to leave, but everyone feels that she should because she's in danger of shit. There is kind of a cool, like, consequence to this stuff, too, where, like, Scotch had a pretty bad time with her first, like, murder in the story. Like, she had a pretty big breakdown. And Blackjack, like, ruminating on, like, how it's going to be horrible to have to go through that a second time now because of this. Ultimately, it's a bad solution to, a, like, an unfixable problem is the sort of tone, which I, again, kind of like about this. Like, this isn't a good solution, and they know it, but, like, what else can they do? Like, they can't medicate her. There's no therapy in the wasteland. Like, what can they actually do for her? Anyways, before they,
I mean, like, it's not like there's a meaningfully, like, running clock. Like, she's in a hospital with a significant amount of staff. Like,
well, I would make the point that the Collegiate does not care, though.
Yeah, I guess it's just a relentlessly, like, horrible, like, yeah, a stupid world requires stupid solutions.
The Collegiate, like, well, the Collegiate is shown multiple times that they're, like, doctors with that, like, firmly clutch their coin purse whenever, like, anyone mentions anything about, like, medical treatment. So, like, they are capitalistic doctors. They're not, like, doctors for the sake of doctorhood. Like, Triage really establishes that. She does not give a fuck. She is just there because it's what she knows how to do. And that is seemingly not, like, an irregular, like, sentiment in the Collegiate. So, yeah. Like, they don't have a solution for Scotch. It's either, like, sit in agony or, like we erase your memories. That's, like, our two solutions. Anyways, we get a real dumb dream that Blackjack has where she, like, is basically experiencing a memory orb in her dream, which would be really, really cool, except for it isn't. Because immediately your thought would be, well, she's abusing the memory orbs too much, and she's now starting to, like, see them outside of her dreams. No, it's just a different thing. If you keep counting, in this chapter, we've had two new kinds of memory experiences, to go along with memory orbs. That are completely separate, independent, and work on completely different levels. But all basically give you the same level of exposition. They decide to go out, but BJ is like, I'm not going to give you the Maltese.exe, but I will help you if I can. And Zodiac is like, all right, cool, that's fair enough. So there's a... In the direction you're going, there's like a place you can like stop at that if you activate the terminal that's in there, it'll allow me to reactivate like the activation codes for Steel Pony, and we'll be able to do it that way. So now they have a dumb, stupid side quest in their side quest of their main quest. Remember how like they were going to try and figure out what the EXE is? Well, not anymore. We're two side quests deep at this point.
Great.
But yeah, and then the chapter ends with just the crew like heading out into the rain, and they're all like, you know, Scotch is unfortunately chipper. She's juxtaposed by the sad tone of it. And Rampage is nowhere to be seen. She has exited the story for the time being. And along the way, like Blackjack, like sees like the silhouette of Rampage, like in the distance in the rain. Which I guess to like talk about at least one final point of something.
Somebody's
like about
Incredible
this
is... Hulk TV show theme playing.
Yeah, exactly. But I do like that. Like Rampage at least had like the foresight to like. Remove herself from the equation at the very least. Like if she knows she's a risk, she's at least not taking the incredible stupid choice of continuing to go on even though she knows she's going to relapse, which is I guess a cool point to be made. Whatever. But yeah, that's the end of our reading for the week. Got any like notes or like final things?
Two things I forgot to mention. Glory turning out to be the rightful princess of the Hoofdwaffen leads back into the like neo-lib fash-aiding like myth of the true king and bad mm-hmm. actors. The only thing wrong with the Hoofdwaffen currently is that it's being controlled by bad actors. There's nothing systemic wrong with their entire ethos.
Listen, the Nazis would have been fine as long as if Hitler was voted out. Then they would have been peachy.
The Strasserites would have been fine. Sure. So something that I'd let slip, like that I'd let go and didn't really attack hard enough, was the implication that the Reaper Dome has low levels of innervation because they're just such good friends.
Yep.
And like how grotesque that is, like how like sort of fundamentally broken that is, like that it really betrays Somber's like lack of understanding about what interpersonal relationships are like and like what friendship like even looks like, because they're this body of like raping murderers is so toxic and enabling that two of their like top four executive factions desperately wanted to die at every moment, so much so that they kept leaving suicide notes. And like every time they fought somebody, they'd write a suicide note in the hopes that...
So an incredibly important note to also to like add, like a pin to add to this too. The Reapers are relatively innovation free, but Flank, the town of hedonism that just wanted to like do drugs and not deal with anybody, had super high levels of innovation. Whoops.
Yeah. because degeneracy and the pleasure of the flesh as opposed to like a death cult where like
where violence is enshrined in a like deeply patriarchal way as well, like a super hierarchical hegemonic way with the Reapers. Like it presents like this meritocracy that like is a myth, because there's like no way you can like get high enough in the meritocracy to matter.
So yeah, these self-hating baby killers who don't know each other.
and rapists, don't forget rapists.
Are in Somber's mind objectively better people than sex workers.
Yep. That's where we are, folks.
Fuck this story. Man, fuck this story. Is there something better we could be reading right now, Fine?
Oh, cool. I guess I have to do recommendations again, don't I? First of all, sadly, we do not have any mail. Weir will do his call of action in a second, but I will do my own call of action, which is seriously, like, we could definitely do with some more fan art, like fan mail and stuff. It changed the whole course of the end of this thing with one, so you think about how much we're willing to, like, consider your dumb ideas from that like line of alone.
And again, it needs be stated, Meteor X is only a few months away from crashing into your world and destroying everything. We need your response power. We need yeah. you. Like I know some of you are listening to this, right? Like Fi gets hearts on his tweets at Thou Art Fi advertising the show. So you know about the show. You've seen his tweets, but you don't say anything. If you remain mute, Meteor X will destroy you and everything you care about. And somehow, Meteor X is so evil that it will preserve the things you hate. Meteor X will only crush the things you love. So we need your validation energy. We need to call upon you to actually write words in the comments of the YouTube upload, at Fi's tweets at Thou Art Fi, in the comment and recommendation section of the iTunes store. We're on iTunes. Podbay has a comment section.
I still want to get a recommendation in though, because I do have one that comes off the top of the dome piece. So this is one of those like problematic fave kind of like situations in which like it's a good story with a bunch of asterisks, but I'm going to recommend Fallout Equestria, Guise of Chaos. Guise of Chaos is, okay. So it's a story. The name of the author escapes me. I used to know it by heart, but don't worry about it. It'll be in the show notes. Don't worry about it. So, Guise of Chaos is a relatively stereotypical story to a certain degree about the main about a main character who is formerly a raider, and in the context of every other story, raider just means like killer and not like a pony disease monster.
You'd have jabroni disease. Okay, so this is the only story wherein like
raider
is
only
specifically related to a disease that makes you subhuman.
Yeah, in this it just makes you like it's the term used for people who like kill one. like bandit or thug. But anyways, it takes place about the story of an amnesiac former raider who was betrayed by his own gang and decides to try and become a better person, deciding that, like, if he was the kind of person that was going to get, like, betrayed by his own gang, that person probably wasn't a good person. And, like, it's still a fun story, despite that fairly, very cliched opening, in that, like, the main character does actually endeavor to become a better person, plus the cast is really fun and colorful. Like, basically all of his, like, secondary characters are, like, fun to read about, including, like, a really cool griffin protagonist with a sniper rifle. And the villains have that, like, cool, like, Metal Gear vibe of, like, they're a cadre of weirdos who all have their goofy specialties and different like, techniques and fighting styles, and, like, having to, like, engage with all of them is a different challenge, and that's kind of a fun concept. It's also a finished story, which is relatively rare for Project Horizons. Like, I was doing a deep dive into, like, completed stories, and there really aren't that many outside of, like, the Big Five. And even the Big Five Heroes didn't finish until, what, like, a couple of months ago. But yeah, so, like, Guys of Chaos is worth a read, if only because, like, it's kind of a fun take on a very stereotypical story. Also, the protagonist is one of the very few protagonists who uses melee weapons. Well, he uses guns mounted to his feet, but don't worry about it. But it does, it ends well. It's got a cool sort of flow through. It doesn't wear out its welcome by being 70 fucking 8 chapters.
that go nowhere!
that go nowhere.
They literally go nowhere. It travels through a microwave hallway to get to nowhere.
But yeah, that's my recommendation.
Let's make sure that we reiterate the call to action. You fools! Meteor X is coming. It will destroy everything you care about, and only those things. And I had to read this! I had to read this story. I had to read an actual excerpt of this badly edited, poorly conceived garbage fire.
There is one thing I want to add, I guess, because I was thinking about this. Outside of that, Fry, if you want to, like, email, I guess, the podcast directly, I'm turning my, like, alt, like, I'm just going to use my alt email as a, like, as a general podcast email, so you can also just email us directly with your questions and comments and concerns at scarfygm at yahoo.ca.
At Yahoo?
No, don't worry. Yeah!
All right, spell Scarfy for the audience.
S-C-A-R-F-Y. It'll be in the show notes as well. I'm an old man who his emails are from fucking, like, decades at this point ago.
You could also send it to Weirdington Esquire at Gmail.
Yeah.
Esquire is spelled E-S-Q.
Yeah, that'll also be in the show notes. But yeah, I guess that's, like, everything. Yeah, just send us a comment, questions.
I had to read this! I had to dip my eyes in it, and it's been my eyes have been exposed, and they'll never be clean. Fie! Fie, I think this might have all been a terrible mistake.